We start with the top of Kusayim and Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is, it brings a new case, but somewhat continues the machlokas that we've had between Rav and Shmuel. And we had the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel about Shnei Achim Shechalku. They divided up Shechalku at Yerusha or some piece of land that they divided up, and all of a sudden their long lost brother shows up. And the question is, what do you do once you have originally split the land, and now this long-lost brother shows up and wants to be involved? He finally shows up because there's something to take, and he wants to know, how does he get his share in the puzzle over here? So Rav says, "Betela machloket," you have to redo. The whole division has to be redone. And Shmuel Amar Mikamtzin, right? There's some sort of readjustment that's machlokas between the Rashbam and Tosafot. Exactly how that readjustment, according to Rashbam, simply means the two parties that have the original division just give him a piece. Each one gives a piece by their own volition, and they end up with a third piece that he gets. Tosa says, why is that fair? Meaning, what did the first two have over the third? Meaning that just because they divided it already means that they keep it and they get to give the third whatever they want? No. You have to do a redivision, and you have to send up a goral. So then how's he different than Rav? Right, so the answer, he says, it depends how the goral lands. For instance, if the goral lands with the, say for instance, there are three pieces of property, and they each took one, plus they split the last one in half. So if he, the third party, wins the, in the goral, wins the piece of property that they split, then their original two pieces will stay with them. Or the other way around, if the third party now takes one of the pieces they had taken originally, then the one they'd split will stay split, and then they'll split the other property. The only thing that Shmuel is saying is that whatever division we can keep that was there originally, we will keep. So we'll try to maintain as much of the original division as we can. But nevertheless, you have to do something fair, which is you have to allow the third party a chance at all the properties. You can't just say, give him whatever you want. Right, so that was the machlokas we saw between Rav and Shmuel. Now the Gemara brings down another machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Itmar achim shechuku. They divided the property. Ubal balchov. So it doesn't matter whether it's two or three. It's all the same din. They divide the property. And then a balchov comes and otachol kosher achad mehem. Balchov comes and snatches one of the properties. Now, it's not clear why he snatched one of the properties. I mean, truthfully, he has a lien on all the properties, and he should have taken evenly from all of them. So Tosos tries to come up with a case where it's like an aputaki, it's somewhat directed collateral, so that's why he went after this field, but it's not totally aputaki. Whatever reason is, he went after and he took one of the brother's property.
Why would he have to do that if there's a big field that's Meshuabah? And he comes, what does he care? He says, okay, listen, I'm going to the Tadalaba, I have to get to half of the property. Where is it, like a quarter and a quarter? I think I have whatever I come out of.
To deal with the parties that own the property now, when you come to take property that's owned by someone, you're going to have to deal with the parties. Right, but he still has to deal with the fact that their two brothers own it now, and they have to take both of them to court. All right, well, that depends. That depends, and that's really the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel now.
As we will see in a second, the Ritva and the Ran over here both try to give a hechet timtzim where he would go after a single brother. The Ritva's suggestion is that creditors are only entitled to take from Yatomim Ziborit, and this individual holds all the Ziborit, and that's why he went after this one individual instead of just taking the property at large. And the Ran gives a similar explanation by saying that generally creditors are able to go after Benonit, and this one individual is holding all the Benonit. So they're both trying to explain why the individual, like Tosos, why this creditor was going after one particular brother and not just taking the land as a whole and saying to the brothers, you know, you take care of it yourselves or you split it between yourselves. It's because this particular brother has the type of land that he's either entitled to or that he wants, and therefore he goes to this one brother and takes all the land from this individual.
Rav Amar, Betela Machloket. The way Rav says it, then it would be no problem what you're suggesting, which is that the original division is no good, right? And then the Baal Chov takes whatever he needs to take, and then you redivide the property. Exactly what you're suggesting, David. The problem is for Shmuel. Shmuel Ar Viter. Shmuel says no, that the subdivision of the property by the brothers makes it that they take all responsibility that happens to their part of the property. That means that they have no recourse to the other brothers. So in this case, it will matter who he takes it from because they're not going to redivide the property. So you can't just say, oh, he'll take his half and then they'll resplit it because they're not going to resplit it. Right? It's going to remain where it is now, and therefore if he takes one of the brothers' property, he's out and the other brother's not responsible whatsoever. We'll see in the Gemara why in a second. Rav Asi Amar, Notel Revia Bekarka Revia Bema'ot. Right here, there's a machlokas Rishonim, how to read this. Rashbam reads it as Revia Bekarka O Revia Bema'ot. He reads it as it's a quarter of Karka or a quarter of Ma'ot. The Tosfos quotes the Rashba, who reads it as Revia Bekarka V Revia Bema'ot, that he gets both. He gets actually Chatzi The Rashbam quotes that other opinion. He quotes Rashi from in Vava Kamma, where Rashi explains this, and Rashi brings both opinions down. And he says the first interpretation is right, which is O, and the Rashbam goes along with Rashi, agrees with his grandfather that the interpretation should be Revi'a Bekarka O Revi'a Bema'ot. Again, I'll explain to you how the other one will work when we come to the explanation of positions. Okay, so we'll see. Rav Amar Betela Machloket. Rav says, why does Rav believe that you have to redivide it? Kasavar Achim Shechalku Yoshim Hein. The brothers that divide are considered inheritors. They're Yoshim. If they are Yoshim, then we say, basically, Huvrara Davar, and there's Breva. And when they went and divided the property, they got exactly what they were supposed to get from the property. So when they get what they're supposed to get from the property, they remain Yoshim. They had no, in terms of their transactions with each other, there is no transaction between the brothers. There's simply one transaction, which is Yerusha from the father to each son. And that's why they have it. And the same will be true, you know, meaning with the Yovel. And when the Yovel comes and the property has to be returned to the proper owner, we'll say the same thing, that they have a din of Yorshim. If they have a din of Yorshim, Yorshim don't return any property to the, right, the don't have to return anything, they don't have to change anything. Whereas if you believe they are Lukuchot, they're buyers, then you'd have to every Yovel, you'd have to redivide the property between the brothers because they're Lukuchot from each other, they're buyers from one another. So Rab believes this, who brought a davar, and they have a din of Yorshim. Shmuel Amar, Viter. Says, no, they're Viter. Why? So the first thing that he disagrees with Rav is that they have a din of Lukuchot and not a din of Yorshim. Why? Because we don't say Huvrar Davar. We don't say that each brother got exactly what he was supposed to get out of the Yusha. Elo. We say that there's a big plot of land here and they have to divide it up. We don't know what belongs to each. Each brother has a right to a percentage of the property, but we don't know where his percentage is. So when we go and subdivide it in any way that we do, or whatever division they come up with, is basically trading. They're trading with each other and saying, listen, I know I have a third, you have a third, so we're going to divide it this way. Even though your third and my third might overlap somewhere along here, or my half and your half will divide, but we're just going to divide it this way and we agree that this is the division now. That basically means that they're trading their rights to the property and assuming that we're going to buy this or purchase this. For the giving up of their rights to the property, to the third or half of the property, they're willing to accept this piece of property. Okay, so what he's going to say, number one, is Lukeach Shlobach Rayut Dami. He says, first of all, they are buyers without recourse because...
Wait,
so there is. We'll say one. They're buyers without recourse because... The way the Rashbam explains it is that with the consideration or the hana, that the division becomes final, that both brothers want the division to be final, and they don't want to have it that you can come back and take a piece of mind if he takes somebody that comes in and bothers you or you bother me. They want it to be final. So the agreement, that hana, that they want it to be a final agreement, makes it lukuchot shelo b'achrayut. Now, your question. What about the fact? Fine, there's an obligation that was on the estate. And why all of a sudden is one party chayav more than the other party? That is because one brother will say, listen, you just didn't happen to have money. I would have paid the Baal Chov off with cash, and he wouldn't have taken any of the property. If I pay him off cash, then he could have come to the other brother and say, pay your share of the loan. The problem is that this brother did not do that. He did not pay with cash. He let him take the property. When he let him take the property, we have a finality of sale. There's no recourse on the property. The problem is how he paid the loan and not... Right, the fact that he did pay the loan. If you actually ask why is this different than any stam lekuchot who have automatically have achrayut, any buyer gets achrayut. We say it's a tot so fair. Even if they don't get it, they're entitled to it. So why over here the brothers are not? And that's what the Rishbam is describing the difference between. It says by a buyer, a person doesn't throw his money bichdi. He doesn't just throw his money away. He wants to know that he bought a piece of land. Over here the brothers have a reason to say there is no achrayut because of that hana, because they want the deal to be final. And they each get a piece of the property. It's not that they're not ending up with anything. They're each ending up with a piece of property, and therefore they want the deal to go through even without a achrayut. So there's a reason to assume there is no achrayut over here. Now, the last...
It's weird because they each understand that if a creditor comes along later, they each have the risk of losing their property. That kind of offsets the hana.
That's the same thing when a company comes to people and says, listen, we have to reduce salaries here. So either everybody takes a 10% reduction in salary, or we're going to have to fire one person. So it's the same bet that you're making. Do you bet, you say, listen, I'm not going to be the one person I'm going to fire. So I say, no, I want to keep my salary. Or you say, maybe, and then you say the 10% down. It's the same thing here. They make a decision that it's more worthwhile for them to split the property and take the risk that they're not the one who has the creditor come and get them. And that's the no, that's what they're doing. They're saying, we want this, we want a finality here, and we're willing to take that risk.
I found the property anyway. I guess,
right. So. There is no cash trading over here, right? They're getting the property.
Anyway, he's not losing, so.
Now, Rav Ashi, Misfekele, it's a question about what he thinks. Iki Yorshim Avu, like Rav, or Iki Lekuchot Avi, like Shmuel. Hilkach Notel Revia Bekarko Revia Bema'ot. So the Reshban's explanation, which follows Rashi's explanation, which they favor, it's simply, it's right. It's Mamon Mutaba Safik. Right, we're not sure. If they have a din of Yoshim, then you'd have to redivide the property. If they have a din of Kuchot, they have no recourse. So it's which one is it? We don't know. If we don't know which one it is, if, for instance, here you have two brothers that have split the property, and a Baal Chov comes and takes the entirety of one of the brothers, now what's left is this one brother has a property. Now according to Rav, you would just split the remaining property in half, and each would get a half. According to Shmuel, you have no recourse whatsoever. So the two possibilities of what you can get. According to Rav, you get half the property. According to Shmuel, you get nothing. So if I have Mamona Mutalba Safek, I don't know, you get a quarter. And that's the way the Rashi explains it. But the quarter is either he can pay the quarter in Revia, right? He can pay in Karko, or he can pay in Ma'ot. He doesn't have to give him a quarter of the land. He can say, listen, I'm giving Karko, I'm paying you off in cash. That's the way the Rashi learns it. That's the one possibility. The other possibility is that he gets Revia Bekarka and Revia Bema'ot. He gets actually half the property. He gets half the property, but he's able to get that payment. He gets half the payment in land and he gets half the payment in Ma'ot. Why is that?
Was it an eighth?
No, it's a quarter and a quarter. He gets a half. He gets a full half in the end. He just gets a quarter in Ma'ot and quarter in Karka. It's made up of two different parts. Why is that? So this other interpretation, which the Rashi quotes and rejects, is because he thinks, okay, is the din like Rav? If the din's like Rav, that means he would get chatzi karka. Or is the din like Shmuel l'kuchot, but not regular l'kuchot? He disagrees with Shmuel's point that it's a kuchot u'shlo b'achrayut, but he thinks it's l'kuchot b'achrayut. There are buyers with recourse, along the lines of Shoal, who didn't like the fact that they were trading away their achrayut. So that's what Rav Ashi says. Rav Ashi says they're l'kuchot b'achrayut. What's the difference between a Yoresh and a Lukuchot Bachrayut? A Yoresh gets paid off with Karka. Lukuchot Bachrayut get paid off with cash. So we're uncertain between which is it here. Is he a Yoresh and therefore he gets Karka? Or is he a Lukuyach Bachrayut and he gets cash? So what do you say? Pay half in cash, half in Karka. Which turns out to be a quarter Karka, a quarter cash, because that gets his half of the property. So that's the position. Now, the Rishbam rejects this position for a simple reason. Whenever you have a machloket between two parties, for instance here, Rav and Shmuel, and the third party comes along, and the Gemara is saying that he have a safek, it sounds like his safek has to relate to the two parties before him. His safek, is he like Rav, or is he like Shmuel? The way we're explaining Rav Ashi right now, he has nothing to do with Shmuel. Shmuel's irrelevant over here, because he is nothing like, Rav Ashi's position is nothing like Shmuel. It's like Rav in one sense, meaning that it could be Yoshim. But on the side that is L'kuchot, it has nothing to do with Shmuel. It's L'kuchot B'achrayut, which is nothing like what Shmuel said. So he holds nothing like Shmuel. So the Rashba says, but if that's the case, can't be that the split is this way. The Rashba, on the other hand, he questions the position of the Rashbam and says, Perisha Kodesh lo B'achrayut, V'teim L'Rashbam, min aleha. Where does he know that it's not b'achrayut? Dilma v'adai lav ki yorshim danu, ela mesfeki k'luchot v'achrayut dami, olo shel achrayut dami. How do you know that the whole safek here is whether he is a yoresh, right, or he is a lokeach? Otherwise, you could have had the difference be, meaning that if you think that's the problem here, why don't you say the safek is between whether he's lokeach v'achrayut and lokeach shelo b'achrayut? I mean, there's that other possibility. Why is it, if you say Yoresh and Lokeach, you could have also divided the same way and say it could be Lokeach Bachrayut, Lokeach Shlo Bachrayut. You'd end up with the same division of Revia Karka, Revia Ma'ot. I mean that the two possibilities give you the same answer or the same possibility. So today he says, Lakach Nivarka, Perishani Shibakutras. And therefore the Rishba says, I think the other Perish in the Rashi, that second Perish that says that the Safakir is between Yoresh and Lokeach Bachrayut, that is the Safakir, and that's the answer of Rav Ashi. Obviously, the problem for the Rashbam explaining it that way is what the Rashbam raised, which is that now Shmuel is not in the picture at all. Shmuel is irrelevant to the picture. And you'd have to argue that Shmuel says Lokeach. So it's like Shmuel in that it's Lokeach, but it's Lokeach Bachrayut. Even though that's not Shmuel, it's not Rav either. If it's not Rav, it's more like Shmuel. I mean, that's how you have to explain it. Whereas,
why should Rav Ashi be entitled to hold that? No, it might be Lekuchot, but Lekuchot
without Rav. Hey, but he's entitled to hold that. It's just that the Gemara doesn't present it that way, generally. When you have a third opinion like this, it wouldn't be presented as a using the Lashon of the two parties before him. That's the Rashbam's claim. I'm not saying it. What you're saying is what the Rashba says is that it doesn't have to be. Over here, that he holds like this Lekuchot because you have another possibility. Otherwise, You could have said that that's exactly a safek. You could have had the safek that it's lokeach v'achrayut, lokeach shelo v'achrayut. It would be an equally good safek over here. Right? And it could have all been in Shmuel. So the fact that the Gemara says Yoresh and lokeach shouldn't change the fact that it could be lokeach v'achrayut over here. That shouldn't lock him in any way. And that's what you're suggesting. He's not locked in to that possibility. So Amar Papa, Hilchoso b'chol hanishmaitta, the loch in all of these cases here is mikamsin. Now, that presents, well, it's not like Shmuel exactly, because it's true on the previous case, which is the case where we had two brothers and then the third brother shows up, that's like Shmuel, which is Mikam Sin. But over here in our case, if you say Mikam Sin, the end is that means that Allah has got Rav. Why? Rav is the only one who says, B'tela Machloka, according to Shmuel over here, there's nothing to redivide anymore. You lost. If you're Lokeach, there's nothing to do. So when Papa says, he really is saying Allah is like Rav, right, in this case. He's saying, Allah is like Shmuel in the case of two brothers plus the third brother that shows up. That's clear. But over here he's saying Allah is like Rav, just not exactly like Rav. Rav says, B'tela Machloket. Rav says you have to redivide. Over here, Mikamsin, according to the Rashbam, means that they give him a piece of the property. According to the Ri, it means they redo the lottery, but whatever we can keep in place, we keep in place. So Allah is like Rav, that is a din of a Yoresh. Allah is like Rav, that there is some sort of redivision here, but not like Rav that says B'tela Machloket, but rather only Mikamsin. So that's what you have to say here. So that's it. That the first case, it's like Shmuel is paskening. The second case, paskening like a Rav, but a derivative of Rav, or a, right, a take on Rav. Now, Amemar Amar, B'tela Machloket. Amemar says, no, B'tela Machloket, that means clearly Allah is like Rav across the board. It means Rav in the previous case is B'tela Machloket. Rav over here is B'tela Machloket. The Allah is like Rav across the board, then B'tela Machloket. B'hilchasa, the answer is B'tela Machloket. The answer is that is B'tela Machloket. So anyway, either way, by the way, the joint, the common denominator between the two positions that we do passing like Rav in our case over here. In the case of the Achin Shechulku, Baba Cho, both of them agree that Allah is like Rav. Just a question, is it Rav and B'tela Machloket, or is it Rav and Mikam Sin? So over here, in this case, it's clear they both agree that Allah is like Rav, and that we say Breiro and Huvra Adava. The only question is in the previous case, which is one passing is like Shmuel, one passing is like Rav. But now the Gemara is saying, even though generally by Mamonos we go like Shmuel, over here he's passing Halacha, he is B'tela Machloket, means that it's going like Rav. And that means across the board we say B'tela Machloket, and the din is like the din is like Rav across the board here. So Tanu Rabbanan, Shlosha Shiyadu Lushum Echad. So Thursday, three parties came down to make an assessment of a property. They were called in. They're the, you know, the assessors. They're called in. You need three people. You need a Beis Din to come and assess the property, whether it's for Mizonos, whether it's for the Ksubas Isha, whatever you need to assess the property for. So now, Echad Omer B'maneh. One says it's worth 100. Ushnaim Omrim B'matayim. And two of them say it's worth 200. Echad Omer B'matayim. One says it's worth 200. Ushnaim Omrim B'maneh. And one says it's worth, or two of them say worth it's 100. One says 200. One, two say 200. B'tel Yachid B'miyuto. Right? That's no question. Here we go. Achuchim Acharov. There's nothing to talk about. The two dictate, and the property's value is based on the two. I did mention this. It was a Shabbos daf a little while ago, but that the problem of batel b'miut over here, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and we deal with this other places. We say that there's a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Well, hochim achar rov by memononos. So over here, you see what hochim achar rov by memononos. How could that be? We pass him like Shmuel. That ain't Ochim Achar Rov. Rav and Shmuel, Allah is like Shmuel b'monos. And we pass him like Shmuel. And we say, the Gemara over there says, Allah is like Shmuel, that we don't go after a Rov. And over here, you're having a Beis Din Paskin, and you're going after a Rov by b'monos. So Tosus raises the issue in Sanhedrin. We'll get to Sanhedrin soon. Tosus raises the issue, and he says, how could it be that we go Achar Rov by b'monos? It should be a... Yeah, it's a case of b'monos. And the Gemara over there, by the Gemara says that how come we know by nefashos that we go achar rov? Right, but the Gemara says is because we have a pasuk says achrim erim latot that we always go after the rov. So Gemara says kal v'chomer should be a kal v'chomer midinim nefashos to dinim mamonos. That's what the Gemara says. So Tosu says, well, okay, if you're willing to make a kal v'chomer if you need nefashos dinim mamonos to tell you that you always go after rov when Bezin comes to psak halacha, then say ochim achar rov v'mamon in general. You should have the same kal v'chomer should work and say mamon in general you should go achar rov. So Tosus makes a cryptic statement, but his answer is, in a rov po, domed a rov l'esham. Basically, he quotes the Gemara from Baba Basra before, where he had the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. He says, the rov by Beis Din is different than the rov by the parot, by Raja. When we're talking about the Raja, and the, whether it's a plowing, or it's the Shechita, he says, the rov that rov is different. The rovs are different. Over here, there's a real rov. Over there, it's not exactly the same rov. That's Tosus' answer. There is a famous Reb Chaim that differentiates and makes a statement. He says that when it comes to Rov of Beis Din, it's different than Rov in general. In general, Rov, we have a Rov and we have a Miut. And then we say that we're koveya pia rov. That's all right. So you have a miut and a rov, but we just say that the rov dictates. That's a process by which we make the decision. But basin, it's not that way. When you have a rov and a miut, what happens? The psak halacha changes it to make it actually a unanimous decision of Beis Din. When you have a rov and a miut, it's ke'ilu eino. It's as if the miut does not exist. As if there's no miut anymore. We're no longer pasuk. Rov is a process by which we determine how Beis Din paskins. But once Beis Din paskins, there's no rov anymore. There's no rov. The psak of Beis Din is unanimously this way. So that's how he gets out of the problem. This is not a din and eino chimach harov b'mamon. Because the rules of Beis Din say that there is no rov. There's no miut anymore. It's unanimous decision. When you have two against one, it's as if there's one doesn't exist and there's only two. And that's the psak halacha of Beis Din. So that's it. The Rebbeinu Chaim solves the problem that way.
Let's say we have a case of a rov. Basically say the same thing. So you have something that would be otherwise asagid. So you don't say that now there is an iskar, right? You see, once you say something is bottle barov.
Okay, so that isn't so clear. There might be in those cases, for instance, if you have three pieces of meat, two of them are kosher, one's not, you might have to take out one piece of meat.
You're right.
You have to take out. Number two is...
But not in every case.
Right, then you have Chozer V'Neir also, which is the possibility that if you bring in and there's an addition to the rov and the miut, do you say Chozer V'Neir? So over those cases, it's not so clear that the miut disappeared. Dealing with Easter anyway, so it's not as big a question. The question is in Mamonos, when we pass the line Shmuel. We pass the line Rab, Bisuri, even Shmuel agrees that we go Charov. Now, another possibility. Now, what happens if you have Echad Omer B'Maneh? One of them says 100. Now, 100 is 25 Sela, just because you'll see the others propose their positions in Selayim. That's 25 Sela, there's 4, right? 4 Zuz, 4 Dinar, 2 A Sela. So it's 4. Echad Omer B'Esrim. One says 20 Sela, which would be the equivalent of 80. Right? Echad Omer B'Shloshim would be the equivalent of 120. So you now have 80, 100, and 120. Those are the three opinions. So now, what's halacha? So the first opinion says, Nidom Memaneh. We go after what? The average. You go the average between them, right? We'll see in a second that it's not so clear according to the Rashbam that it's actually the average. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Tzadok Omer Nidom B'Tishim. We go after 90. We make an assessment between them, means that what's the difference between the highest and lowest? That's 40. And we divide it into a third. We take the biggest, the gap between the high and the low, and we say we divide that in thirds, and we add that to the lowest number. Right now, now we have to explain all this logic. Right, so the one who says maneh, this is the most logical one, he says it's the average, it's the middle. Very good. So that's, he doesn't say it's the average, he says mitziato, it's the middle. So that the Rashbam claims that this is a din of... Right, that's the median, but he does not claim it's the median. He does.
It's the middle one.
Why? Because he basically says, Bichlal, right? He says, Bichlal maneh matayim. He says the upper two numbers agree that it's at least a maneh. Meaning that you have a 90, you have an 80, you have 100, and 120. Even the 120 agrees that it's at least 100. So he says, that's why you go after the 100. So the Rashbam proposes over here that it's not the average.
Right.
So the Rashbam says that it's not necessarily the average. It turns out in this case that it's the average. But he said the same would be true if you had, like, say, for instance, 98, 100, and 120. He still said you would still go with 100. Because it's b'chal maneh matayim. So he says it's not really the average. It's the middle number. Because the middle number is incorporated by both the highest number and the middle number. Both agree, it's at least that much. So therefore, that's why he says it. So the Rashbam, you could argue, I say, the logic could be mitziyata really means the middle and the average. And this is unique, because the case is 80, 100, 120. And if you move either of the numbers, the average would change. Alright, but that's not, the Rashbam claims mitziyata means it's got to land on one of the numbers, because b'chla maneh matayim. That's the way Rashbam explains it. Now, v'lazav rabbi tzadok omer, nidon b'tishim. Goes after 90. Why? Because Savar Ha'ara says this land Tishim Shavet. It's really worth 90. Behind the Kamar Esrim, the one who says that it was 80 Katoi Asara Lachore, he underestimates the value of the property by 10. That's a reasonable mistake. Behind the Kamar Maneh, the one who says 100 Katoi Asara Lachame, he's overestimates it by 10. So that's a reasonable mistake between people is 10. He says 10 Zuzim. So therefore, you pick 90 because it's 10 below and 10 above. It's 10 above the 80 and 10 below the 100. Adarava. So let's just say, hi, Ara, mea basara. Just make it 110. Right? And then you're also within 10 of two parties, right? Then it's Shavio. It's really worth 110. By the Kamar Maneh Katoya Sarla Chure, the one who says 100 is underestimating by 10. By the Kamar Shloshim, the one who says 120, Katoya Sarla Kame, he's overestimating by 100. So Gemara says, this logic is very hard, I will say. Nakot miu trei kamai biyadech. You got to take the first two. Why? You take the lower two. I mean, Torat Maneh lo mafkile. Because from Torat Maneh, you're not going to leave it. I'll read you the Rishbam. It says, Komar. From all of the parties here, we have to say it's worth somewhere close to 100. But not the money itself. And not after the two other parties. That it's more than 100. The tafasta meruba lo tafasta. It says, all three parties agree that it's somewhere near 100. All right, now you have two choices now how to divide it. I say the mistake can be up to 10. So it can either be 90 or 110. So we say, tafasta meruba lo tafasta. So we go after the lower number of the two. To be honest with you, it's a logic that doesn't grab me necessarily, but Tosfos brings quotes to the Rashbam and says that's the logic here as well, that it's a tafasta meruba lo tafasta. So we take the miut, and since all of them are close to 100, we know it's within the closest number to 100, so we take the 90, which is the lower two between the two. That's the explanation of this, why we picked those two over the other two. Now, achayim armim osim shuma b'neim, umishal shalim. So we explained it that they take the 40 and they divide it up into thirds. That means that if you take 40 and divide the thirds, you get a 13 and a third. Right? 13 and a third would be the third amount. So there. Kasavri ayara tishin utlat avitil tashavi. It's really worth 93 and a third, which is 13 and a third above the 80, right? Now, v'hai dekamar esrim katoi tlei servitil tachorei. The one who says 80 makes the normal mistake, which 13 and a third is the amount of mistake that someone can make here. V'hai dekamar maneh. Well, he shouldn't be saying a maneh. He really should be saying 106 and two thirds. So why does he say maneh? Katoi tlei servitil tachorei. He really overestimated by 13 and two thirds. But ubedinu delay mitzvei. He really should say more. He really should say 106 and two thirds. V'agelo kamar. So why doesn't he say it? Why does he only say maneh? Savar mistai kad mistafina kulehai achavrai. So he says, I'm too scared to go so far away from the first party, from the first bidder. The first person said it's 80. So now he's going to be 106 and two thirds. He says that's too far away. So he reduces his number to 100 to say, look, I'm not so far away from the first party. So the underlying, the Tosfos suggests here that the underlying assumption is that this has to be the order. The way the Brisa laid out the order, which was 80, 120, right, that was the order of their positions. That 80, that's who spoke. The 80 spoke first, then the 100, then the 120. The Rashbam disagrees. The Rashbam says here, no, could have been in any order, but we know that there's a Masa Matan beforehand. They're discussing it amongst them. Before they come to a final agreement on price, they each are stating their opinions and their veil. So you have some sense of what the other party is going to say, he says. You have some premonition that the other party is going to say 80. So he says he doesn't want to be too far away. Really, he should say 106 two-thirds, but he doesn't want to be so far away, so he says 100. So that's what Omar says. Omar says, all right, wait a minute. Adarabo, you have the same problem again. Why not say, if you're willing to say that they're 13 and a third away, let's say this. Hara mea tleisar v'tlat toshavio. It's really worth, right, 100 and, what? It's worth 113 and a third. The one who making the mistake is off by 13 and a third. The one who says 100 is off by 13 and a third. He underestimates it. The one who says 120, he really should be saying 126 and two thirds. But he's too far. He should say more. He says, I'm too embarrassed to go so far away from my friend, so he reduces it down to 120. So why do we pick that between the 80 and the 100 as being the right difference? Why don't we pick between the 100 and 120? So again, the Gemara says, same answer the Gemara gives before, that they're all within range of 100, and therefore we're going to go to fasta meruba lo tafasta, so we go with the lower of the two. Right, that's the explanation, that seems to be the explanation. Now, the explanation here is basically that you have a reasonable error of 13 and a third. Right, the position before, Rabbi Lezer Yaakov says the reasonable error is 10. That people making an estimate, a reasonable error is 10. Over here, the Achayim are suggesting a reasonable error is 13 and a third. So if it's really a 13 and a third, then we should see people spreading more than a 13 and a third between them. Why is that not happening? It's not happening is because people are scared to be too far away from each other. It's true, I mean, it's a human, psychology, that people are scared that when they see, even though people think that something's worth a certain amount, they're too scared to be far away from the other party. So this party would have been further away, but the reason he's reducing his estimate is because he sees the other guy's at 80. Right? Sometimes sometimes people put in a low bid, in order to show, even though they know that it's not an acceptable bid, but they want to show that you're, you know, that nobody should be so far away, because that brings down the whole, right, range of people. Sometimes people say this person's totally off. They don't know what's going on because everybody else is far away from them. Or the other possibility is that they've bid so low that everybody else feels obligated to move their bids down because they're scared to be so far away. They think they're missing something here. So that's what they say here. That he thinks, the other guy thinks he doesn't want to be so far away. He's missing something in the picture, so he brings his number down. So therefore, according to this, you would have three positions here. One position is it's 100. Is the Shuma. One position that it's 90, that's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and the Chayrim, which believe that it's 93 and a third. That's going to be the three positions of what the Shuma is in this case. So now, what's the Halacha? This Gemara says, Amar Rav Huna, Halacha Kachayrim. Rav Huna says that the Halacha is like the Chayrim. Amar Vashi, Rav Vashi comes along and says, Time of the Chayrim, Lo Yadina. He says, we don't understand the Achirim. Not that we don't understand, but the logic makes no sense. He says, so we don't understand the logic. And then you want to pass an halacha like them? This whole 13 and a third business, we don't get it. When you want to go ahead now and paskin the halacha in that way? There's no way. That the halacha can't be like the Achirim. Ella, the halacha is like the Tanakama, that it's a maneh. Right? And again, that will be subject to whether it's really the estimate, the average, or is it the maneh, which is bechla maneh matayim. That means that the two upper numbers that we're going to take, because they have, it basically becomes the rove. It's tenu, dainei de gola. We have another brisa that says dainei de gola, which are Shmuel and Karna. Usim shuma benehem, umushalshim. So we have them basically saying a stam brisa that says exactly like the Achirim, that basically upholds the position of Achirim. Usim shuma benehem, umushalshim. Amravuna yochasak dainei de gola. The Allah is like dainei de gola. Amravashi, time of the dainei de gola, the yodino, and yochasak dino, and kavatai. Same interchange between them, which is in, that the Rav Huna says Allah is like the Dainei Gola. Along comes Rashi, says we don't understand the logic behind it. You're not going to pass them like that. We don't pass them like the Dainei Gola, who are exactly like the Achirim. The Rashi puts over here that how come the Gemara doesn't ask? He already said it one time. The Gemara, whenever it has, you say Allah ki Achirim, and then he says Allah ki Dainei Gola. The Gemara usually asks, wait, no, you already said it once. Why do you have to say it twice? So Rashi says that's not true. The Gemara will only ask that question when there's some difference or nuance between them. In this case, the two, the Brisa and the Gemara, are exactly alike, and the Pesach Halacha is exactly alike. So when the cases are identical, we don't ask, why did he pass an Halacha this way? Because we know why he passed an Halacha this way, because they're identical cases. When do we ask the case? Like, for instance, the cases are different, and then he says, Halacha ki so-and-so, in both cases. So in that case, we say, since there's a difference in the case, why did he have to come and tell us the same halacha? If he tells us this once, we know it. And then the Gemara tries to differentiate or say why he needs to say it in both cases. In this case, there's no difference between the cases. There's no difference in what he says. Therefore, the Gemara says, there's no reason to ask. That's what the Rashi explains over here, why the Gemara doesn't challenge why this is repeated twice. First thing, I just point out, in the logic of the Achirim, the Ri raises a just a logical nuance. It seems to be an abnormality here, which is that, say for instance, two parties came along, and they had an argument. One of them said it's worth, right, 120. One says it's worth 100. If one says it's worth 120, one says it's worth 100, what's going to come out now? That they're going to give the shuma, it's going to be 110. Because even according to the Achirim, you take the difference between them, which is 20, you divide it in half, and you get 10. So it'll be 110 according to them. Then all of a sudden, one party shows up and says it's 80. So now, if I had just two parties, it would be 100 and 120, they would get it to be 110, would be the Shuma. All of a sudden, this guy shows up and says it's 80. So now, he has more influence than the first two parties. When he says it's 80, it becomes 93 and a third. So because this guy shows up and gives a low, you know, a low number on it, all of a sudden, we move the number from 110, which would have been the average between the two parties, down to 93 and a third. So this 80 has disproportionate value in the argument over here. He has heavier weight in the decision over here. So he says he doesn't understand the logic behind this, that a third party could come in and all of a sudden, because of his number, he takes his like disproportionate influence. The answer is basically what the Gemara says before, which is tafasim ruba lo tafasta, that the Gemara wants to move it, you know, more. But in the end, it turns out to be this abnormality where you'll move from 110 to 93 and a third because one more party shows up. Which doesn't seem to make so much sense. And that might be why Rav Ashi over here says, Lo Yadina, I don't understand. We don't understand the logic of the Achirim. And therefore, you know, we don't pass it like that. We pass it like the Tanakam, which will make more sense. In the case we have 120, it comes out to 110. If you add an 80, it comes out to 100. Meaning that he has the same weighting in the numbers as the other parties do. Right? That's a possibility. Right now, the new Mishnah. Amar lechavero, chatzi sadeh ani mocher lecha. So he says, I'm selling you half a field. Mishamnim nehem. We assess it between them, and hotel chatzisadeo, and he gets half the field. I'm giving you a half in the south, Then again, they divide up the value. Benotel chetzia b'darom, and he takes the southern half. Over here, he does not sell the whole field. Then the seller agrees to provide space in the field to put up a fence. Charitz ben charitz, which the Gemara will explain what that is. The pit and the son of the pit. How wide is the charitz? Is shisha tefachim, six tefach. Ben charitz, how wide is that? Is three tefachim. Now, the explanation. No, so here Rashman explains here that when you sell the field, the assumption is that you can fence in your field. That you're giving him a field that he can fence in and protect them. Right. Over here, that it's the case. Because if you sell them the whole field, then there's nothing to talk about. You get what you got, and that's it. But when you say to someone, I'm going to give you chetzi, the underlying assumption is that you can fence the field in. That's a given, that you should be able to fence the field in, not ayin ra, not ayin tovah. That's a field comes with the fence. And that's it. So you have to give him the area of the fence around. Right. In the end. Exactly.
Although the Rambam in Hilchos Mechira actually says that the obligations on the buyer, that the Mishnah refers to the buyer, not to the seller, and therefore it's the buyer's obligation to put up the fence. The Rashash explains that the obligation is that the buyer must prevent any damage from coming to the seller by his having the field here. So he has to erect whatever fences or whatever protections needed so that the seller does not lose out over here. But depending whether it's the Rashbam or the Rambam, one party here is going to have to be obligated to provide protection to the other party, and that will come at their own expense.
Alright, so Amar Rabbi Chiyah Avam Rabbi Yochanan, Lokeach Notel Kechush Shebo. The buyer takes the worst of the property, or the weakest of the property. So, Vamar Alei Rabbi Chiyah Avam Rabbi Yochanan, Anan Mishamnim B'nehem Tanan. The Mishnah says that you assess the value of the property. So if you assess the value of the property, what are you talking about taking the worst of the property? You have to divide it up equally according to the monetary value of the property. But since you know, before you sit and eat the dates in Bavel and you know luxuriate yourself, right? Targima miseifa, learn out from the seifa. Yet your explanation doesn't make any sense. The tani seifa, the seifa says chetzia b'darom ani mochelcha. I'm giving the half in the south. Mishamni b'neim. So then they assess the value. It's been a tel chetzia b'darom. It takes the southern half. V'amai mishamni b'neim. What do you have to do with assessing value? He says I'm giving you the southern half. What? Who cares what the value of it is? It's half the southern half of the field. You already said, I'm giving you the southern half. Must be for the value. Means for the value. So what does this mean? The Rashbam explains here that the Mishamnim B'nehem means that when we say I'm selling you half the field, it means I'm selling you half the value of this field. Say this field is worth 100. This year is worth 100. I have to give you 50 worth of the field, 50 dinar. Now, the problem is that the property here, this big field that has 100 in it, is all the quality of the property is not the same. There's parts of it that are idit, parts of it that are ziborit. So what comes along, Reb Chir Bavans and Biochran says that ilkeach, the buyer can get the worst of it. Now, the seller has a right to determine which part of the property he gives to him. He can give him the ziborit. He can give him the benonit, to give him the idit. Likely is that he's going to give him the ziborit. Now, when he gives him Zibarit, it has to still be equal to 50 dinar. It has to be equal to half the value of the property. So based on that, what's going to end up happening is that you won't get, if he gives him Zibarit, he's going to have to give him more than half the field. But it has to equal 50 dinar. And that's his explanation. I mean, the Rambam says that this is the explanation of what Reb Chiyah Ba'ab is suggesting over here. When it says Mishamnim B'nehem, it means that yes, there is a value division. The division means you get half the field. When you get half the field, it means you get half the value. Now, once I've given you half the value, I can present that value in different ways. I can present you the value by giving you ziborit. I can present it to you in idit. That's my choice. I can present that value to you in any way I want, as long as I'm giving you half the value. That's the answer of it. Now, what does that mean by chetzi b'darom? If you had just read the Mishnah, it's chetzi b'darom, you would have just said, he gets the southern half no matter what it's worth. Right? You just take the southern half and then that's it. What's there to talk about? But now, when you say Mishamnim B'nehem, when you say that you have to assess the value, right, that is, all of a sudden it changes, right, who cares about assessing value? Say Chetzi B'darom, it should just be, I take the field, the 50% that's towards the southern side you get, doesn't matter what it's worth, doesn't matter what quality it is, you get that, that's your Chetzi B'darom. So that's not, why does the Mishnah say Mishamnim B'nehem? So the Mishnah introduces a new aspect over here. So that means that when it comes to the Darom, when it says, you get the darom, it means he can give you property wherever he wants. He says, "Ain't shamin kol sadeh l'chetzia shebedarom." You go to the southern half of the field and you assess the value of the southern half of the field. Whether it's weak, good. Basically, he's saying, look, you get the southern half of the field, but you don't get the southern half of the field. You get the value of the southern half of the field. So yeah, we're going to take the 50% towards the southern side, and we're going to value it. Once I've gotten the value of that southern half, I'll give you whatever I want and wherever I want in the field. So again, the statements of half the field and the southern half of the field are just statements of value. You're entitled to half the value of the field. You're entitled to the southern half, the value of the southern half of the field. Once I've determined the value, I can present that value to any way I want. And obviously, I'm going to present it to you in the what's best for me. I'm going to keep the best land. I'm going to keep what I want, which positions or what sides I want. And I'm going to give you land anywhere. And that's the explanation, according to B'chir B'Avam Rabbi Yochanan, that this, Okeach, when it comes to is to explain why the Mishnah says, Meshamnim Dam. The Meshamnim Dam is simply a value division, not a literal division. And that's the explanation of the Mishnah. It's not a distribution of property. It's simply, right, a distribution of value. And when you have distribution of value, the seller has the right to distribute it any way he wants once we've assessed what that value is. All right. He has to provide for him a fence and so on and so forth. The Charitz, the Ben Charitz. Gemara says, Tana, what is this Charitz Ben? The Charitz mi bachutz, uben Charitz mi bifnim. The Charitz is outside and the Ben Charitz is on the inside, not inside literally, but next to it, further in. And they're both outside the fence. Right? Why is that? So that the animals can't jump onto the fence. Why does this prevent them? Why? If you just make a charitz and not make a ben charitz at all, I did the ravach, since it's six tvachim wide, it's a wide ditch. Therefore, kaima begavei, what the animals are going to do is they're going to go into the ditch itself, and then they'll jump from inside of it. I mean that since it has enough room for them to jump inside of it, they therefore will climb into it and pull back a little bit and jump from inside the charitz and get onto the gedder. So la'avid ben charitz. So let's just make a ben charitz, which is narrow. It's three tefachim wide. So then they can't go inside of it. It's not wide enough for them to enter close enough to the fence. But la'avid charitz, and then we won't have to have a charitz. I did a katin since it's too narrow. What they're going to do is just jump from the other side of the ben charitz. Meaning that if you're too close to the fence, within three tefachim of the fence, you just jump from the bank and you jump onto the fence. So it's not wide enough. So what do I do? So then, what do? I do, I place a charitz and a ben charitz. So that doesn't allow the animal to get into, meaning that there's no way for the animal now to position itself to jump onto the fence. But kama ben charitz, a ben charitz, so how much is between them is a tefach. So end up being, you have a six tefach, right? You have a ditch that is six tefach, right? And then you'll have a ben charitz, which is three tefachim. And then you'll have the fence. So the six tefach prevents the animal from jumping, right, inside to the fence, because he's too far away from the fence now, because there's a ben charitz between him and the fence, right? So therefore, he can't jump from inside that ditch all the way to the fence. It's too far. And the ben charitz, he can't get into the ben charitz, right? Because the ben charitz would have allowed him, if it was just the ben charitz, then he would be have a flat plateau afterwards, a bank.
The ben charitz is between the charitz and the wall.
And the wall, right. I think that's the way you'd have to explain it. And therefore, when he can't, what he can't do is stand on the embankment. There's no embankment to stand on. Because the edge of the ben charitz is the charitz itself. So if you're already standing on the flat plateau, the bank, that's already nine tefachim away from the fence. So by placing the charitz and the ben charitz in the fence, it prevents an animal from having a position where it can get onto the fence. If he goes into the ditch, he's too far away still because there's the ben charitz between him and the fence. If he was just the ben charitz and he could have gone on the embankment, he's too close to the fence, he could just jump from the bank onto the fence. So therefore, you have a charitz that moves him farther away from the fence. So therefore, he's unable to jump from either way, and this prevents the animals from getting onto the fence and jumping into the field.
So
that's the idea.
So the animal jumps. Mm-hmm. Where does he land?
From where is he jumping? From the bank? It's going to land.
From outside of all the charitzim. Let's say he jumps.
So he jumps. He lands in the charitz.
In the charitz.
Or in the ben charitz. Either one. You can have a jump.
If he lands in the charitz, what happens if he jumps from within the charitz?
Well, he has to be backed up. He has to be on the embankment on the upper side, where he's closer up. But he's too far away now, because he still has the ben charitz. Yeah, he'll land
in the
ben.
What happens if he lands in the ben charitz? Why can't he jump from there?
Sounds like he has to be on a plateau. He needs to be on some flat ground.
Only a tefach, and he has no footing.
Right, there's no footing in between them, and the charitz is too narrow for him to have footing inside the charitz. Then charitz. That's what it sounds like from the Gemara. All right, we'll stop here.